Dramatised events. Characters and letters in this series were inspired by true stories from known historical facts and archive. A story of Irish whiskey. How three families saved it from extinction. In the 1800s, the Irish were kings of the world. Irish whiskey was the whiskey of choice around the globe. This was reflected by the fact that Irish distillers controlled about 70% of the world whiskey market. Cork, in particular, was at the epicentre of this, with a dozen large distilleries making significant profits. The four main distillers in Dublin produced around 5 million gallons of whiskey, enough to fill over 10 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Innovation and forward thinking were uppermost in the distillers' minds, especially that of John Jameson II.
I kind of wonder what sort of person he was, and it's very difficult at this distance, you know, to try and find out.
Carol Quinn, archivist, Irish Distillers.
And I was amazed when I came into work one day. I got an email from the Reverend Bridget Spain of the Unitarian Church in Stephen's Green, and she had been going through their congregational registers, and there was John Jameson. And at this time, we're talking now, you know, the early 19th century, the Unitarians were looked on with a bit of distrust by the established religion, by the government, because they were free thinkers. They were people who thought for themselves. They embraced science. They embraced learning. They had controversial views. The first doctor to offer inoculations in Dublin was a member of the Unitarian Church. These were the people that John Jameson was mixing with. And these would have been people full of challenging ideas, boundary pushers. So I get a great vision of what he was like. He was somebody that would embrace a challenge.
It was a time which saw Jameson become one of the largest producers of whiskey in the world, distilling an astonishing 1 million gallons per year. Jameson's process and their individuality singled them out. We know about John Jameson II's approach because in our archives we have one of his most treasured, personal and secret possessions.
It's the pocket notebook of John Jameson II when he was distilling at the Bow Street Distillery. And it's a beautiful brown notebook. He would have bought this in one of the booksellers, I would think, on Aran Quay. It was a workaday item. There is a lovely little leather clasp at the front, and when you open that up and pull back the cover, there's no decoration on the inside, but there's the inscription in his own hand. John Jameson, Bow Street, March 1st, 1826. And he signs it with this lovely little flourish, because it's something he's obviously quite proud of, and inside is an absolute treasure for Irish whiskey history. It's his original recipes, his mash bills from the Jameson Distillery at Bow Street in 1826.
You know, if I could alter this ever so slightly, it might give an even more rounded balance. Barley so fresh, so pure.
And you can see him trying out different things. There's different formula here. He's naming the different grains that he's using, the amount of water that's going in versus the amount of barley, what comes off the stills, whether it's a good distillation, whether it's a bad distillation.
That's almost perfect. Balancing on the edge.
And you can see him. You can see him bent over his desk, looking over at the stills, writing down in this and really, really hoping that everything is going to come out okay. Everything is riding on this for him. And it's not just him, it's his family.
We can't be the same. Not just another whiskey. We need to be different, distinctive, assertive without being arrogant. It must have Irishness.
Everyone that he employs, he's going to know them. It's going to be a small, tight-knit community. So there's quite a lot riding on his interpretation of what the best Irish whiskey will be. And every so often when you turn the pages, there's a blob of ink. And I can imagine him actually, you know, cursing that this blob is ruining the beautiful look of his notebook.
Blasted ink.
When we first came across this notebook in the archive, it was lumped in with lots of other pieces of paper. We didn't know what it was, and it looked particularly tatty. The leather had broken off in all sorts of different places. So I knew that before we could even open it, before we could put any pressure on the spine, it had to be treated by a paper conservator so that I could literally open it to actually see the recipes. And to do this, he had to take off the binding. And when he did, what fell out of the spine is actual grains of barley from 1826. Obviously, one evening, John Jameson, he's there at the distillery. He snaps the notebook shut. He shoves it into his pocket. He doesn't realise he's tracked these grains. He goes about his business. And so many, many decades later, we open it up and out falls the actual grains of barley that were making Jameson whiskey in 1826.
When you find a treasure trove like that.
Brian Nation, Master Distiller, Irish Distillers.
You really do need to go through it. You really do need to look at it and appreciate how advanced they were and how innovative they were at that time as well. And for us to try and retry some of it or take it a little bit of a step further just to see what the impact would be. Jameson is made using both pot still whiskey and grain whiskey. So when I talk about pot still whiskey, what I mean is that it's whiskey made from a mash bill of malted barley and unmalted barley. So that would be one of the things that would set us apart immediately, because, you know, in traditionally Scotch whiskey would be 100% malted barley, but we use a combination of malted and unmalted barley. The malted barley that we use is unpeated, so there's no smoky taste off any of our whiskies. It then is distilled three times in copper pot stills. And it's that third distillation that gives our whiskies that exceptional smoothness.
The recipe that is used today has evolved from that developed some 200 years ago. Barry Crockett, retired master distiller at Midleton, a title held by his father before him, explains why this approach holds its integrity even today.
That artisanal approach is as crucial today as it was back in the very early days of the distillery here at Midleton, or indeed in Dublin as well. So, I mean, it's that particular approach which enables the formulation or the development of different whiskey characters and different whiskey flavours. What would deem it
right? In the 19th century, Irish whiskey, it was really an international product. And this is something that I think we don't realise quite how big it really was. And it operated on a world stage. And during the 19th century, there was almost a mania for what they'd call world fairs. And these were huge exhibitions at which manufacturers would come from all over the globe, and they would showcase what was the newest, the finest, the most modern, new techniques.
Turin House, 1966. The meeting of the Irish whiskey families.
Ah, yeah. Pa's had lots of good times, but there were challenges too. Some business-related, some personal, and some a mix of both. But I guess none matched the spirit of the challenge brought by the Chicago World Fair in 1893.
Oh, yes, your meeting with a future American president.
Is that story really true?
An urban legend, I'd say. But Powers certainly made an impression at that World Trade Fair.
The previous World's Fair had taken place in Paris, and the centre part of that was the unveiling of the Eiffel Tower. So it was really being put up to the Americans. They needed to come up with a showstopper equal to the Eiffel Tower. And what they actually produced, it was the Ferris wheel. So that's the first time a Ferris wheel was ever seen. It was really a tremendous event. And Powers were in the middle of it. They had chosen to exhibit at the World's Fair because they saw themselves very much as an international brand. They saw themselves as the equal to any of the competitors they might have met there. And equally, they wanted to have a showstopper. They weren't just going to have a stand saying, here's Powers whiskey, you know, have a glass. They wanted something that when you went in, your jaw would drop. and you would talk about it. And people would come to these World's Fair, not just from America or from the host city, they would come from all over the world. Literally millions of people would pass through this. So it was the most wonderful opportunity to showcase your product if you had the confidence to do it. So what they chose to do, because they were really proud of where they came from, and this is something that I think is so important about Irish whiskey, that it was an internationally recognised drink that had a fantastic reputation and appreciation internationally. And there wasn't that many things came out of Ireland at that time that would have that prestige and that status. So it was something that the distilleries were rightfully proud about. So they wanted to highlight their Irishness. They defined themselves really by coming from Ireland. So what they chose to do is to reproduce a life-size round tower.
'93. World Fair preparations are underway.
Sir, I'm not sure about building it so large. I mean, a 20-foot replica of a round tower, and not just any round tower, but the O'Connell Monument. And you want it built entirely from Powers whiskey bottles.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Well, it's quite a daring idea, but should we perhaps reconsider it? Specifically the height and design. I know you want to make a bold statement because we've come all this way to the World Trade Fair, but I think...
You're right. A 30-foot replica of the O'Connell Monument. Now, that's a bold statement that will show the people who we are.
But, sir, there isn't enough time. And I'm not sure it's possible. Nothing like this has been done before.
The difference between possible and impossible is belief. Nothing else. So it's going to be the O'Connell Monument and it's going to be 30 feet. Or should we go higher?
No. No. 30 feet it is, sir.
Now, this is something that every Irish schoolchild learns about and knows about. It's ubiquitous in the Irish landscape. They come from early Middle Ages, Viking times, and they were seen as a refuge or a place of safety. But because they're so synonymous with the Irish landscape, the Round Tower had been chosen to be the O'Connell Monument in Glasnevin Cemetery. To Americanize a completely unusual and strange structure... And it was tiers upon tiers of Powers Gold Label whiskey. And the bottles were facing out. The gold label at that time, it was produced using ground bronze. It was actual metal in the label. And behind each bottle, they put a mirror with glass. So all the electric light would have been reflecting off the blazing gold label, is dancing off the mirror behind. And you just look up and up and up and you would go, wow, what is this? Tell me about it. And not only would they be showcasing the whiskey, they were showcasing Ireland. And I think it's a real pivotal moment because it just shows the confidence, the absolute confidence that they can go to something like the Chicago World's Fair and pull off this incredible exhibit.
Andrew Jamieson, good to see you.
Quite the stand you have here. Though stand isn't exactly the right word.
It will be as tall as a house and it will be...
Watch out! Watch out down there! Are you all okay? Are you all okay?
What on earth?
Hey, it was him! It was that man there wearing glasses!
I'll have you arrested!
Sorry, sorry. He's with me. May I introduce Senator Teddy Roosevelt?
Sorry, guys. I was curious about these unorthodox building blocks. So I reached out to touch the bottles to see if they were actually real glass bottles filled with whiskey.
The next time you're curious, why not just ask? Our sculpture reflects what's inside our bottles of Powers.
Whiskey, right? And the ability to balance?
Please, take a couple of bottles to quench your curiosity.
Thank you. I look forward to this.
Men, come on, we're behind now. Not a shard of glass is to be left on the floor. Back to work. Donovan, source more bottles ASAP.
The Chicago World Trade Fair in 1893 was the high point.
The 30-foot round tower created from Powers whiskey bottles epitomised the ambition, scope and standing of Irish whiskey on the world stage. On the next episode of A Story of Irish Whiskey, how three families saved it from extinction. The 20th century was coming, but there was to be no bright dawn ahead. It was to be a time of wars, prohibition and revolutions when Irish whiskey fell to its knees. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and it was all outside of the family's control. A Story of Irish Whiskey is produced by lastcastmedia.com for Irish Distillers, with special thanks to our interviewees for their contributions to the series, in particular those at the Middleton and Bow Street Distilleries. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And for more information on Irish whiskey, go to irishdistillers.ie.